Hello and welcome to the very latest edition of the official EFL podcast. This week, our very special guest, just off the back of a statement victory in the Sky Bet Championship, is Plymouth Argyle boss Stephen Schumacher.
It was a great day. Saturday we played really well against who we think is going to be a really top side in the Championship, and everything sort of seemed to go for us on Saturday. And it's always good going into a clear week with a win, because you can plan and prepare without having a scowl on your face all week, yeah.
Returning on co-hosting duties, and he is most welcome back, it's Gary Weaver, Sky Sports commentator, and we're going to head down to the Valley to speak to Charlton's Alfie May as he faces the 72 in 72. This is the official EFL podcast. Right then, let's get cracking on this week's edition of the official EFL podcast. Back to co-host, co-pilot, and to be my wingman once again, one of Sky Sports' very finest, Gary Weaver. How are you?
I'm all right, Prutz. I watched an episode the other week where you said no one asks you how you are. So how are you? Are you feeling okay?
That still feels token. It doesn't feel
it was
like there's
very
anything.
Much token.
Do you know what? Do you know, in essence, in my being, I'm all right.
Yes.
This morning, I took our dog for a walk, for a run, actually. And by run, I mean a stag around a reservoir near us. And what I do nowadays is quick touch of the toes and just run till I feel like I'm going to pass out. Did the same thing. And I'm currently in possession of what I feel like is pretty much a pulled left calf.
Oh, no, you've injured yourself, have you?
I have.
Fans of clubs you played for would not be surprised.
No, the fact that I'm trying to claim that I was above a jog is where they would be very shocked at that. Other than
I'm never
falling apart
ask you
at
again.
42. No, I know. So.
Right.
We should have just gone with the platitude. Yes, I'm fine. Anyway,
there you go.
People haven't tuned in to know about me.
No.
They don't care. They care about people that we have on, such as your good self. And we're going to get cracking with the Sky Bet Championship, fresh from a game on the Monday night, Coventry against Huddersfield Town. A lot of chat last week, of course, with Neil Warnock moving on, not retiring. Moving on, we'll wait to see where he plots up. But then that, of course, opens the door for someone to come back into the game. And one of the good guys, one of the best guys, steps back into the fray, Darren Moore. Last seen helping Sheffield Wednesday into the Championship. Last seen celebrating wildly off the back of the most insane comeback we've ever seen in a League One semi-final second leg. This man takes a reign with the Terriers. What are your initial thoughts of the game that you saw? What do you think is going to be the case with Darren leading the West Yorkshire outfit, Gary?
With the game, I thought, well, obviously Coventry were the better team first half. Huddersfield looked lost in that first half. And then second half, different Huddersfield. They engaged Coventry further up the pitch, went after Coventry, got that late equal. He likes a late goal, Darren Moore, doesn't he? If you look at his, I think it's his last four goals as a manager, they've come after the 90th minute. bit of late drama. But I spoke to Darren the day of the game, I think it was, on the morning, and he said he'd had a couple of training sessions, didn't want to give the players too much information, didn't want to overload them. He's trying to get to the international break, which is four games, including Coventry, before having a full review and bedding down a style. Of course, the last game before that international break is the Sheffield Wednesday, isn't it? Which will be interesting.
Could be tasty.
As he goes back there. But he got appointed on the back of, what happened with Neil Warnock. He was asked to take over, stay on in the summer while the takeover was completed. Mm-hmm. And the new owner was saying, listen, just stay in office. We'll look for a new long-term manager. When that happens, are you okay to step aside? And it happened quicker than they expected it to. And they did all their due diligence and Darren Moore kept coming out on top. So they thought, he's going to get snapped up. We need to act now, which is why it happened a bit quicker, I think, than Neil expected. I sent Neil a text last week asking for a little research chat, as we tend to do. And he phoned me at 7:55 as I was just doing the teams on the telly. And then he sent me a text saying, sorry, Gary, I forgot about it. Just remembered. I thought, you watching the match? You just heard us now. I'll give him a ring. But no, he's like Neil's always been great with us, and as you say, it's whetted his appetite, hasn't it? So he will be back. But for Darren Moore, it's probably like being handed the microphone by Sinatra after what Neil's done at Huddersfield. But I think Darren will pick up the baton and do well.
Well, we'll keep a keen eye on that. Of course, I'm intrigued to know, and time will tell with regards to what the definition of a long-term manager appointment is nowadays in the Championship. Fingers crossed, that is one that's very long and fruitful for both the Terriers and Darren Moore. What has been pretty fruitful so far down in Plymouth, I'm trying to work out, a man that's from a very similar area to you, Gary, is Stephen Schumacher, who's doing very, very well indeed. Let's keep our powder dry with the real incisive stuff when we speak to him later on in the podcast. Stay tuned for that. But what result of the weekend against Norwich? A statement win for Plymouth Argyle.
Yeah, incredible. We did Norwich against Leicester in the midweek, and albeit Leicester won, Norwich had a good go second half. Couldn't see that coming at all. The scoreline on the weekend. There's something special about Plymouth, isn't there? There's something special about going down there. They keep winning their home games, going back to last season. I think they've won 23 of the last 27 at home, I think it is now. So there's something special going on down there. And also, Puts, you know, we talk to analysts in the game and the level of analysis they do. Morgan Whittaker scored a hat-trick. He was told by the analysts that Norwich defenders tend to block the eye line of their goalkeeper. And so two of his goals, he sent them around defenders, and the Norwich keeper couldn't see the ball coming his way till late. So the level of depth that analysts go to in football these days. Stephen changed system to a back three from playing the 4-3-3 that he'd been playing as well. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't see a 6-2 coming.
I'll be intrigued to see that from the horse, or listen to that from the horse's mouth later on. I'm sure you'll give him chapter and verse about the change in formation. I look forward to that one. Another team that came up, of course, alongside Plymouth Argyle was Ipswich Town. They came from behind to beat Wolves in the Carabao Cup. They're level on points with first. Joint most points, 21. Joint most goals scored in 17. They've only lost one game in their last 27 competitive matches. We spoke to Kieran a few weeks ago. That wonderful work that they've started the season with seems to be carrying on. Are we seeing a team, a big club, historically, here for the long haul?
Looks like they're making up for lost time, doesn't it? You know, a few years in the third tier, which, you know, a club like Ipswich should never be there. But you can say that about a lot of clubs, I suppose. I think the worry for Ipswich is holding on to Kieran, isn't it? At this moment in time, it's the best ever start to a second tier season by a newly promoted club in EFL history from what they've done, Ipswich. So that shows you what's gone on under Kieran, and he wants them to be brave and attacking, which is why you're getting so many goals at Portman Road. Obviously, he's had a couple of 1-0 wins on the road. But it's a special place to go, that place, isn't it, Portman Road, when it's packed and when they're playing as they are. And as you said, they beat Wolves the other night. Jack Taylor scored a beauty, didn't he?
fantastic.
Oh, to win it. So I think Ipswich's main concern at the moment will be trying to hold on to Kieran, because when the changes are made, as usually happens October time, some could come calling. But when we spoke to him, as you say, the other week, he looked so happy and settled there. And why not? He's been doing brilliantly.
I'm sure you heard, dear listener, if you go stat for stat with a commentator, he will come at you with a better stat. And I think you've realised that just happened. There's a box I'm getting back into labelled Stay In Here.
Sorry, Brutz. Sorry, mate.
No, it's about knowing your role in life, my friend. I'm a facilitator, you're the talent.
Might not be true, you know.
Like anything, say it with conviction. People will follow. Don't you
think
that?
It's right.
Two big games coming up this weekend in the Championship for different reasons. Southampton taking on Leeds. That is a work in progress, would be the nice way of putting what's going on at Southampton. We know Russell well. We know exactly what he wants from the team. We know, and we've chatted to him here on the podcast. Leeds seem to have clicked into gear, though. Tough visitors, aren't they, Leeds, for Southampton on Saturday?
I think the thing with Leeds is, first of all, Daniel Farke, if you look at his history, going back to even his amateur team and his lower league team in Germany, he starts slowly. His teams do start season slowly. But on top of that, you had the absolute carnage they had to deal with in the transfer window. Where players did agree last season, or when they signed, that they would take would agree to a relegation clause. But Leeds said, okay, the other side of that is you can go on loan if another club comes in for you. And that's why, it was incredible what was happening in Leeds. So it's no surprise that once the window shut, things have picked up. And I think the Wofford game, I think Daniel Farke described it as the most complete performance yet. They're keeping clean sheets as well. So whereas Leeds had a slow start, and you can understand that, they're starting to pick up now. And also, we can't talk about Daniel Farke without mentioning that unbelievable touch as he brought the ball down with unusual shoes after the weekend against... against Watford. But yeah, it just seems like everything seems to be clicking there now. And you know, it's still going to be a tough trip to Southampton because Southampton have got, you know, a point to prove at the moment, haven't they?
They have indeed. I've been stood in exactly the same place on the Elland Road pitch, and it's bounced straight off my knee, my head, my shoulder.
Is that called the David Prutton corner where you pull that down?
Yeah, there's just a patch of mud where my studs have scraped it all up. That's one of the key games. The other key game being on Sunday, two former Premier League champions going head-to-head, Blackburn against Leicester City, one we're all very much looking forward to. Right, let's delve into League One. Pompey sit at the very top, Oxford in second, Stevenage in third, and a call to arms from Steve Evans. I mean, as call to arms go from a particular person, Gary, you don't turn it down from Steve Evans, do you?
I love Steve Evans. He's an absolute character. He's never far away from the headlines. Although he says he's mellowed a bit now, doesn't he? He's not in the ear as much as the of the officials as he used to be. But yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Stevenage and Steve Evans, they had such an unbelievable time last season that this is even beyond their wildest dreams to be where they are right now. And he does give teams a DNA, doesn't he? An identity. You know what you're going to get, you know, from his teams. And I think his character, you know, he pulls players along with him. He's actually said you can't go in and smash dressing room walls down anymore. Those days are gone.
Yeah, it's dry.
You've got to bring players. Yeah, you've got to bring players along with you. And Steve's got that kind of character to do that. And obviously, Stevenage are benefiting.
And long may that continue, of course. Let's look a little bit further down the divisions. Now, eyes are trained down towards Reading, Fleetwood and Cheltenham. Wigan, of course, down there in 21st as well. Let's start at the bottom. Cheltenham, Wade Elliott moved on. I mean, they're still in search of a goal. Another former player and manager that we've both had experience of working with across the board. He leaves them rooted to the bottom with 1 point. It's tough, isn't it? Because as we're speaking to Steve Schumacher in due course, and
yeah,
it feels like these first jobs when a manager's in its management career's in its infancy, they have to go right, don't they? Does it just go to show just how tough professional management is, and it has been at Cheltenham?
It is, and also, you know, you think of Cheltenham in League One, I think they're always going to be fighting against the side, aren't they, as it stands at the moment? You know, you're right, they haven't scored a goal, which is incredible, really. They scored one in the trophy, but that was an own goal, wasn't it, from Bristol Rovers, James Gibbons. But David Bloxham, the chair there, he's actually said, making that decision and knocking on Wade's door and telling him about it was the toughest thing he's had to do as chair of Cheltenham. But, you know, when they played against Stevenage at the weekend, they were applauded off the pitch. They lost 3-0. They hit the bar. But yeah, it's a tough time. I know, you know, they've asked Steve Cotterill, who's obviously an icon there, to think about going back, and he said no. But he's given them bits and bobs of advice. But, you know, when you lose Alfie May, their leading scorer last season, 22 goals, he's got 4-4, or 4 in his last 4 for Charlton, which is probably even rubbing salt into the wounds at Cheltenham, isn't it? I think it's a difficult ask for Cheltenham, and they survived last season. They persuaded Alfie May to stay in January and see the season through. But it's a big appointment on the way.
Goes to show, doesn't it? You lose your key players and you're asked to do the same thing. It's really, really tough. Fleetwood, of course, made a change. Lee Johnson has come in. They sit just above Cheltenham in the table. And we've always been a fan of Lee and the way that he builds, doesn't he? He seems to want to go into a football club to be able to not just oversee the first team, but everything to do with the recruitment, the restructure, the way that he's going to move forward. Are we going to see a Fleetwood revival, do you feel, Gary?
Well, he's the person to do it, isn't he, Lee Johnson? I did Hibernian last season when he was manager there, and you know, he was loving his time up in Edinburgh, and he took Hibs into Europe. They obviously were smashed by Aston Villa in that first leg, which was his penultimate game. But, you know, we've known Lee Johnson a long time, and his stock was so high at Bristol City, wasn't it? He was on the Manchester City futures manager list. That's how well he was doing at Bristol City at the time. Obviously left there. I did wonder, I'll be honest with you, Brooks, I did wonder, he only had a couple of weeks after the game, didn't he? And then he's taking that job on, and you think, you know, obviously Lee will know best, but you don't think at all, is that too soon to go back in? But he's back in the Northwest, and he's been based in the Northwest for quite some time. And Fleetwood's a good club. It's, you know, it's got a brilliant training facility, which is open to the community as well, and they've done a lot of good work there at Fleetwood Town. So, Lee going in there, he'll have all his gadgets, won't he? You know, when he goes out in the opposition and measures as the... when he gets to the grounds and measures the length of the grass, he's got his little gadget, commonly known as a ruler, probably, just to
magic
how long the grass is, so he can tell his players whether to put more on the passes than they would at home and stuff like that. But But yeah, you know, I think it's good for Lee Johnson to be, you know, in the game because of his knowledge and the way, you know, you look at the players he's developed, put over £100 million worth of talent, you know, so he's a good coach. Didn't work out for him at Hibernian, and you hope it does at Fleetwood.
Testing times, of course, for both Reading and Wigan. We saw Ruben Sellers, didn't we, talk to the travelling fans away at Bloomfield Road. So, again, stories that keep going on, showing just how tough life can be at the very sharp end in Sky Bet League One. In the EFL Trophy, as you mentioned, big wins for Barnsley against Manchester City and Bolton scoring 8 against the red part of Manchester. But moving down into Sky Bet League Two, Doncaster faced Gillingham. Ahead of that, you would kind of, if you were a betting man, which of course I'm not, you would obviously think that Gillingham, given how well they've done against the Doncaster side that's battling hard at the wrong end of the table, it would be a Gillingham win. But of course it wasn't, was it? It was Doncaster that beat Gillingham.
I know. And I think Neil Harris, he has said he's still trying to work out how. He said he's baffled by what happened. But as for Doncaster, Brooks, I think the performance against Everton in the Carabao Cup was important for them. I know they lost the game, but that performance, I think, just seemed to spark something in Grant McCann's team. And you know, he's had a lot of injuries to deal with. I think he's still into double figures for injuries, but if they win it this coming weekend, it's the best run of form for 2 years. So they're kind of finding the feet this season now. But I think that performance against Everton really boosted confidence levels, I think.
Talking about confidence boosting, beating Peterborough last night on penalties, Mansfield Town, second time in the League Cup that they've gone through on penalties, obviously going past Sheffield Wednesday in the previous round. It's the first time they've got to this stage in the League Cup for 48 years. And given how well they've been doing in the league so far, he talks about a big week. They've got Gillingham coming up at the weekend. Again, Nigel Clough, synonymous with success within the very kind of beating heart of what the EFL pyramid is all about. And again, are we going to see the confidence of a team from that particular result pushing themselves that doesn't make any sense.
You're just randomly picking words, my friend.
Yeah, catapulting themselves forward. There you go.
Yeah, look, Mansfield, they're desperate to get out of League Two, aren't they? There's been so much of an investment from the owners there, the Radfords, to get out of League Two. I know Nigel Clough, he's got a 1 year deal now. He's on a 1 year deal, so I think the pressure's on to get out. Or certainly make the playoffs this season. It was heartbreaking for them last season. But, you know, they brought the likes of Aidan Flint in, haven't they? So, again, that's a sign of intent. But, they're absolutely desperate to get out of there. You know, they've been close on occasions. I remember doing a playoff game there against Newport a few years ago. Newport won it, ultimately. And Tranmere won the playoff final. But they've had promotion challenges, for the last 6 years. So the pressure, I think the pressure is on, Nigel, to get out of that division. But as we've spoken about League Two before, it's so tough this season, and Nigel can handle that pressure, can't he?
Very much so. And when you look at someone like Davies Caylor Dunn attracting interest from teams higher up the pyramid, I suppose it's imperative as well, as we spoke about Alfie May moving on from Cheltenham Town, come January, if they're in the same position, currently third in League Two, currently very, very well placed, imperative that the ownership model looks at that and says, Nigel, you need to keep him, you can keep him, let's crack on.
Yeah, and that's a big question, isn't it, Brooks? Because if someone comes knocking on the door with a huge amount of cash for him that matches the valuation, but then, as you say, the ambition is to get out of this league, and if you're going to get out of League Two, you need to keep him. And he's, you know, working for a manager, Nigel Clough, who obviously knows the way to goal. He's told him to get in the box more, things will drop to him. That's exactly what's happening. Get your shots off quicker. That's what he's doing. So a lot of investments in terms of coaching time as well as gone into him. So if Mansfield are to achieve what they want to achieve and get out of League Two, then they have to hang on to him. But then, you know, we're not in that boardroom when clubs come calling saying, oh yeah, is a bagload of cash, what are you going to do?
Don't you tell me that's how you get paid weekly from Sky Sport. Elsewhere, a statement victory, of course, for Stockport, putting 5 past Wrexham. But down at the bottom, Sutton propping everyone else up. Tranmere, though, a huge victory for them, potentially.
Nigel Adkins, positivity, eh? Taking over at the club he loves. You know, he's from Birkenhead. Birkenhead, I should say, pronounce it properly. Got my Scouse tags in that Birkenhead. He's from that part of the world. He loves Tranmere Rovers. I think he's made his debut there as a 17-year-old in the early 80s. But he's such a positive character that you can only see one thing happening to Tranmere, and that is winning games and moving clear with Nigel in charge as it is at the moment. But Tranmere, they obviously were in non-league a few years ago, clawed their way out, got to the third tier under Mickey Mellon. They cannot go back into the National League, and that's why, you know, again, it's a big club, pressures on Nigel and Tranmere.
Very much so. And before this gets to Merseyside and Scouse Base, ahead of our next guest, Stephen Schumacher, who's coming up after the middle portion of this week's EFL podcast. We're going to take a little break. We've gone to Tranmere via the Liverpool dulcet tones of Gary Weaver. Gary, you can take a little break now, because do you know what we're going to do?
Go on.
We're going to head down to the Valley for this week's edition of 72 in 72.
Hi, I'm Alfie May. This is EFL 72-72. Plymouth exit up Bristol City, Bristol Rovers, Cheltenham, Forest Green, West Brom, Norwich, Chef Wednesday, Chef United, Barnsley, Peterborough, Cholton, Gillingham, AFC Wimbledon. I've crumbled. Have I crumbled? Come on. Ipswich, Leighton Orient, Newport County, Doncaster Rovers, my God, that's gone.
Trigger.
Why is this so hard?
You're supposed to be doing it
20 seconds.
I've gone. Crumbled.
You've still got 15 seconds.
Okay, everyone's talking now.
What's your question?
Now I've actually gone. Gone.
Right then, Alfie May there taking on the 72 in 72 on the official EFL podcast. 19 points for him. Nowhere near Matt Smith, who's still top of the tree with 38 points. Crazy, really. John Coleman behind him with 26. Down at the bottom, Stuart Dallas, 17, and Aaron Ramsey, 13, propping up the table. Right, joining myself and Gary Weaver for the second portion of the podcast is the Plymouth Argyle boss, Stephen Schumacher, fresh from scoring 6 goals at the weekend. It must mean, Stephen, that this week's been an absolute doddle. Have you just enjoyed it?
Yeah, certainly better than the start of the week, yeah. I've enjoyed the last few days more than what we did after Bristol City, for sure. But it was a great day. Saturday we played really well against who we think is going to be a really top side in the Championship, and everything sort of seemed to go for us on Saturday. And yeah, it's always good going into a clear week with a win, because you can plan and prepare without having a scowl on your face all week. Yeah.
and the thing is as well, when you're watching it, whether you're watching it on Soccer Saturday or listening to the radio in the car, as the updates keep coming through, when you're set up as a team to play on a Saturday afternoon and the manager wants a good first half, what happens when you come in at that score? You've got another 45. Keep doing exactly what you've done, lads. That was exactly what I was after, which, I mean, you can't say that too many times, can you?
No, definitely not. It was funny when the fourth official put the added time board on. I kicked off Adam and said, where have you got 4 minutes from me? And he said, well, that's what, there's been a couple of injuries and whatever, and the 2 goals. So I was like, oh, okay. And then we scored. And he said that there's 30 seconds to go. So obviously the game kicks off again, and I'm shouting down his ear again, Sully, come on, that's definitely 30 seconds. And we regained the ball, and before we knew it, we were 4-0 up. So yeah, going into the dressing room, 4-0 up rather than 2-0 up was great. And I think a load of our fans missed both goals because they all went down for a pint early. So as well.
Stephen, how big was it, a decision was it to kind of change your system for that game and go back to what you were doing last season?
Yeah, we just felt the way that Norwich kind of set up, Gary, they're really good in possession. We kind of expected them to have a fair bit of the ball. That's what the data had said. The positions that their wide players take up, they come inside the pitch, so they get loads of bodies in the central area. So we just tried to get an extra one in there with an extra defender and be a little bit more compact, so harder to play through the middle. And if we got an opportunity then to intercept and counter-attack, it might stand us in good stead. And I think 5 of the goals were on regain and transition, so the game plan kind of worked, and we showed a bit of quality when we did intercept, which is what we've done a few times this season. But haven't managed to make the most of them chances. But as I say, Saturday we seem to get it all right.
You mentioned about that magic, and the thing that jumps out straight away is Morgan Whittaker with a hat trick. But the Finn Azaz goal, my word! That, I mean, he sat down a couple of defenders, rolled. It was a thing of beauty. And like you say, when you look at what you've done this season, when you look at what Norwich have done this season, there's been a lot of chat around Plymouth Argyle and what we expect, because we've seen you at close quarters for the last few seasons. That looked to me like a team that for that day, for that period of 90 plus minutes, felt very, very comfortable in the Championship.
Yeah, I think top puts, I think the majority of our performances have been pretty good. Yeah. There was only one in the league that we haven't really played well in, and that was at Bristol City, and we got turned over. Bristol were well better than us on the day. And we just felt that we just came off our standards a little bit for whatever reason. We just didn't get it right. And the rest of the performances have been quite good. As you're saying, but we feel as though we've competed and done well in the Championship, and that was my main message to the players early on at the start of the season. Like, let's try and have the ball. Let's try and be brave and be positive and prove to everybody that, you know, we can compete at this level and we do deserve to be here. So the confidence that the players have played with has been great. But as I say, we just haven't managed to turn them good performances into maximum points. Whereas Saturday, we did. We defended really well. We nullified Norwich to a few chances, really. And then when we intercepted and broke and counter-attacked, we were devastating on the break. So, yeah, going back to the old system as well probably helped. I think 8 of the starting 11 that played all played for us last season as well. So just having that little, right, let's get back to what we did last year so well, maybe helped, maybe made a factor too.
But in terms of the system, Steve, because I know you played 4-3-3 at the start, and you were looking at that, weren't you, in the summer, and looked at teams in the Championship last year. And I remember you said to me as well earlier this season that you spoke to Ange Postecoglou when you went to a Celtic game, and he told you, like, well, not I told you, but, you know, he was going on about the advantages of it. How important are those conversations, Stephen? Because we always hear that, you know, managers go and have conversations with other managers, maybe more experienced. How important are those, and how helpful was it with talking to Ange when he was Celtic manager at the time?
Yeah, he was brilliant. I got the opportunity the back end of last season to go and watch Celtic against Rangers in the Scottish League Cup final, and I was really impressed with how Celtic played. Considering it was a cup final, they had so much control of the game, but and were really on the front foot, really positive, got loads of bodies forward, and never looked as though they were under any pressure to transition and counter-attack. So I had sort of had it in my mind, if we get to the Championship, that might be an idea for us going forward, because in League One, playing a back three and being expansive as we were quite often open to counter-attacks. That's what Argyle's team was like last year. And we just felt stepping into the Championship with the added quality, that might cause us a problem. So go with four defenders rather than three. And then when I went and spoke to Ange and he explained it all and explained the pluses and the negatives to the system, I just felt, let's just have a go at it. Let's have a go. Let's see if we can get that message across to the players. Let's see if we can, as I say, have control of possession in the Championship against better teams and see how we get on. And say for 8 games, I think we've done really well in 7 of them. And then the 9th game, obviously, against Norwich, we went back to a system that we're comfortable in. So I'm glad that the players have got a good understanding of it. I feel as though I've got a better grasp of the coach 4-3-3. But also, we've got 2 systems that we can play, and that keeps the opposition guessing, I suppose, at what we're going to set up every week, which is what we did so well last year.
Is that part of your development as a manager in your own right as well? Because obviously, a lot's been made of how you've come to this position. Everyone's the opportunity that gets afforded with Ryan Lowe moving on. And as we had Ryan on the other week, and as you can well imagine, couldn't get a word in edgewise, but we got plenty of good stuff out of him. And of course, you went head-to-head just a couple of weeks ago. So when you spend a lot of time as footballers, don't we, where you get taught a lot of things and you come through the ranks and you get older and you progress and hopefully you have a decent career. And then as a manager, you become a young manager like yourself, and then suddenly you're on another ladder, and hopefully that ladder's going vertically and you're climbing up it steadily away, and you talk to people like Ange Postecoglou. I mean, that's an amazing touchstone to be able to have. And then to think, well, I need to be successful, I need to get results, but I also need to develop. I need to give my players plan A, plan B, plan C. Do you find that as fascinating as you would do as when you were a younger player and developing how you were and what your career might be?
Yeah, definitely. It's more fascinating now. I'm enjoying this side of the game well more than I did as a player. So not many people say that, but I had an okay career, decent enough career. Started, obviously, at Everton and played for England and was very fortunate as a young player. But then as a professional, played in League One and League Two. So grinded it out for 14 seasons, if you like. But quite early on in my career, knew that I wanted to get into coaching. So
how young would you have been when you thought that?
I want to say around the time I was playing for Bury, so maybe 25, 26, knew that this interests me, it intrigued me, how why managers would set us up this way and pick how we go about other teams. I don't think there was as much of the tactical element back then when I was playing. I think obviously the analysis and the data that's come into the game now brings in all different layers. So now, as a coach, I would have classed myself as an inexperienced coach, even though I've been doing it 5 years now. Mm-hmm. And also, I want to take risks and test myself all the time. Like for the first few seasons when I worked as alongside Ryan, we played 3-5-2 predominantly. We knew a system and everybody knew their role, and we were always proud that our players were organised. Then when Ryan moved on, I changed in the first full season to 3-4-3. Again, figured out what other teams had done well against us, tried to see what could cause teams in League One problems, and we felt going with a box in midfield last season would give us an advantage. And then we always had a go-to, a plan B, if we needed to go 3-5-2 or change to back four, whatever. We had other options. And then this year again, I just thought, well, let's not be safe. Let's take risk and let's go to a back four. Let's try and recruit players for that. And if you'd explain the roles clearly enough, and then you go back to the players and say to them why you've come up with this tactic, or why you think this personnel is the right personnel for this game, then generally they'll take it on board and try the best. And that's what our lads have done this year. They've been brilliant playing a back four. And as we've shown on Saturday, we played the back five and it looks seamless. So we've got two strings to our bow this year to go with.
Just going back to your days, Everton, Stephen, you were in the same youth team as Wayne Rooney, weren't you? And there's going to be a couple of questions, really. A, did you feel that...
what happened to him? Is that one of them?
A, where is he? Has he been in touch? But no, I was going to say, I mean, did you feel that your team were getting judged in terms of where maybe the standard is Wayne in terms of getting into the first team at Everton? But also, when you were released by Everton, I think you told me that your dad was upset, but you said, listen, I'm coming back here one day to manage this football club.
Yeah, I did say that, yeah. And going on with Wayne was obviously unbelievable. I think he's 18 months younger than me, Wayne, but played in my age group and played above me for the under-19s and probably got into the reserve team beforehand because, you know, he was that extra bit special than everybody else. He was physically more developed than everybody at our age, 16, 17. He was probably mentally ready for it. He didn't care that he was the youngest player in the dressing room. He knew he was the best player, so he played with that confidence. So us other young lads who we felt were all good players, were probably sitting alongside him and saying they're not quite as good as Wayne.
Which is tough.
Yeah, and I'm not sure Moisey would have turned around and said in Wayne's first 18 months that he's going to be who was England's leading goal scorer and one of the best players this country's ever produced. I don't think anyone would have said that apart from Wayne himself, because that's he was. So he was the benchmark. And then, getting released from Everton obviously was a big blow. It was devastating as a young lad at 20. I was playing for England that season and got released, which in this day and age, that wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. But I had to go out into the big bad world, went to Bradford City and loved it. But never a sort of let it affect me, but always had one eye on it. Okay, if I'm going to be a coach, if I'm going to be a manager, then that's my goal. I want to be the Everton manager. Me missus goes mad. Why do you want to manage Everton? There's so many better clubs than Everton. But,
what?
But not for me.
Where's this come from?
But not for me. Wow. No, that's the goal.
Brilliant.
That's amazing. I presume your wife's not your agent. They're rubbish. You're not going there, look. Steve, it's funny you mention Wayne Rooney. I was in the under-21s about the same time that he came blasting through. And if memory serves me correctly, I think he trained with us for a morning, which would have been an hour and a half. And then we never saw him again because he kind of went bounced. Everyone went, he's amazing. What's he doing here? And he went bounced straight up into the first team. It's stunning, really, the way that kind of thing. You see it firsthand, don't you? You talk about him being special, and he said it in a very understated way, and then suddenly he's moving on. But I mean, do you use situations like that, former teammates like that, as examples? Do you see the evolution that I hear so much about of the dressing room? About it's not like it used to be, and for good, for bad, for different reasons. Have you found that you're perhaps the vibe in a dressing room that you might have been in 15, 20 years ago is not quite the same thing now?
No, it's completely the opposite. Yeah, I think modern day society, the way society is, I think the young lads are the difference in the way they interact, the way they socialise, the way they speak to people, the difference. So therefore, I think the coaches have got to adapt. We can't expect young players to behave the way we behaved. I'm glad that our young players don't behave the way we behave. They'll get me in trouble with me missus.
You're already in trouble.
I think it's a lot more professional approach. So therefore, us as coaching staff, it's got to be a little bit more professional. I think the players need help, and they want help more as well. They want to understand the game. Mm. I think more than what we did growing up. Mm. Probably want to know the ins and outs of everything, and as I say, they want to know their stats and their data behind how they perform. So I think you've got to lend yourself to that and be understanding of where they're at socially this day and age.
You know, just going back to when you went into management, was it, or coaching really, was it a risk that you took when Ryan came, not because it's Ryan, but when Ryan came calling? And I think were you coaching Everton under-11s at the time, or under-18s, sorry, at the time? And then, you know, you had a steady job, really, and then Ryan's giving you this opportunity. Did you have to, like, really think about it? Was it a risk?
Yeah, it was a huge risk. So I'd just sort of retired from Stevenage. I played at Stevenage for me last year, and we wanted to move back up north. We bought a house up north, and sort of said I'd go on trial in the summer if I can, and see if I can get a deal up north that's going to pay the bills. That's what I was going to do. As it turned out, the options that I had to go on trial didn't really excite me. So I phoned Everton and asked for a coaching job, a part-time coaching job, and they said, well, we can do better than that. We've got a full-time job for you if you want, the under-11s. I had to go in and do like a coaching presentation, if you like a trial coaching day, and they offered me the under-11s job full-time, which still allowed me to play part-time for Southport. So I was doing that, loving it, got involved with the coaching, going through my badges and whatever, trying to figure out how to be a coach in the academy system. And I was only there from August until, I think it was just after Christmas, when Ryan phoned me and said he'd been offered the Bury job, and would I like to come in? It's only going to get it till the end of the season on a caretaker basis, and would I like to join him as part of his first team coach? So I had to go and see the head of coaching then at the time, which was Sean London at Everton, and I explained to him this opportunity, and he said, well, it's a big risk, because what if Ryan gets sacked in the summer? What if he don't get the job? So again, I had to speak to the boss and say, well, this is a risk. I'm leaving a full-time or steady job, and I'm going to have a go at it. And if it doesn't pay off, then we'll figure out something else. We'll go somewhere else. So she said, do what you want to do and do your best. So it was a good decision in the end. I haven't looked back, and getting back in the first team environment, I think going back straight away, only after being out the game for 6 months, helped as well, because I was still relative to the players that we were coaching. I still understood what they wanted. I was only young. I was only 33, 34 at the time. So I felt that being that type of coach for them, they could speak to and open up to, and that probably gave me a little bit of an advantage to start with, yeah.
It certainly seems like it was the correct decision to make. Obviously, hindsight's a wonderful thing, and it's safe to say as well, what you've experienced over those few years in coaching and coming into management is going to stand you in good stead. Let's just flip it back to Plymouth and the way that it's going. I mean, such is the nature of... Everyone talks about Plymouth, and the geography of the city comes into play, doesn't it? Because you've got Hull City this weekend. A quick look on Google Maps, that's nearly a 700-mile round trip. But a lot's made of that particular part of the world. A lot's made about that particular part of the world, and it's not having a Premier League football team as yet. Yeah. I'm sure given what you've seen so far, given what your ambitions are, you strike me, and you've always struck me as a very, very, very ambitious manager now. Within the ranks, within the kind of the inner circle, what are you lot looking at down there at Plymouth Argyle this season, and where do you think you could end up given what you've seen from the Championship so far, Stephen?
Well, what we've seen so far is that it's ultra competitive. It's like every game, you've got to be at it. So you're planning, are you the detail that you've got to go through for all of the teams. It's just on a completely different level to where we've just came from. There's more than just a handful of teams that can hurt you. It feels like every team that you're up against has got quality players, and you need to, I say, you've got to do your work. If you don't do the work, you're going to get found out. So it's so competitive. But I think as a squad, I think the objective this year was to try and stay in the Championship. Let's be sustainable. Let's see if we can compete and stay in the league. And if we stay in the league, then that gives us an opportunity to build next year and obviously in the future. We know where we're at financially. We're nowhere near. We will be the lowest budget in the league. We understand that. But hopefully that won't be the case forever. And the longer we can stick it around the Championship, the longer we can get the fan base on board. Like, we're selling out every single week.
I mean, the fan base is staggering, isn't it? And Gary's worked there and commentated there, and that's when we do this job, this side of the fence, Stephen, the easy side of the fence, when we don't have to make decisions and pick teams and get results. Yeah. Going to somewhere like a Plymouth Argyle, going to Home Park, Gary, it's just an absolute pleasure of a football club, isn't it?
I love it. You know, when we get the rota, you go into Plymouth, and I was saying this, Stephen, but I said that on the podcast the other week. I stayed there for three nights last time, didn't I? I didn't come back for a while. Because it's just a brilliant place. And there's a snap in the air, there's a crackle in the air on match days, which is why I always say it's like a mini Newcastle, and the green shirts are everywhere. And Stephen, on match days, you must get a buzz. You must like feel that around the city on a match day.
Yeah, I feel it every day, Gary. Literally at the moment, I live right in the middle of the city, so...
Yeah,
we can't move without people saying "this, Shuey, and good luck and well done." And what happened there? What happened? Why did you pick that? So I literally can't move, and that's how big it's growing, and I think it can get even better. So our away support is incredible, and as long as we can keep putting performances in and keep that excitement building, then we're thinking long term. Well, maybe other investors are going to get excited about it, because as you say, it's the biggest city that's never had a top flight footballing club. So it's going to take that type of investment. Simon Hallett is a brilliant owner and chairman, but he will openly admit he's going to need help for us to get to that next level. But we've got to look at the likes of Luton, Brighton, Bournemouth, who have all had similar journeys, came from the lower leagues and ended up in the Premier League. So why can't that be our ambition? It's not going to be obviously this season, but why can't it be in the next few years have that in our sights?
And get yourself an owner that takes you to Glastonbury, eh?
Well, apparently I'm not invited next year, he said, so I'm not too happy about that.
But, is that because you managed to get, was it Morgan Whittaker you got? Yeah, After a conversation, late night.
Yeah, I managed to convince him to give us £1 million more than just set around the campfire at midnight.
That's why you're not going next year.
That's why you can't get me again next year, because he knows I'll be asking for £2 million.
I can just picture the chat. Chairman, a couple of beers, round of that. Yeah, £1 million for Morgan Whittaker, nice one. Yeah, I'll be back in a minute. Yeah,
done.
I presume you were in a tent together, so you must have done it in the posh way, surely.
Oh, it was the best way to do Glastonbury you could ever imagine. It's like, it was a once in a lifetime type of thing, and hopefully it's more than that. But no, it was so great. It was a brilliant week, and it was topped off as we were on our way home, coming down the motorway, and I get a phone call from Andrew Parkinson and Neil Jusnip saying, "Right, you can go and buy Morgan Whittaker."
That's
fantastic. I mean, and again, a reflection how solid and sincere and aligned management leadership can help a football club move forward. And it's wonderful to see. Right, chaps. Gary Weaver, you've been wonderful. Thank you very much.
Like you. So have you.
Well, I mean, that was such an offhanded, backhanded compliment. I'm going to swat it straight away. And Stephen, it's been a pleasure to see it so far. Long may it continue, my friend. And the best of luck with the rest of the season.
Cheers. Thanks, bro.
Thanks, Ron, Stephen. Good luck, mate.
Thank you. Ta.
So there you go. Another edition of the podcast done for the week. My big thank you to Stephen Schumacher, Gary Weaver and Alfie May for taking part. As always, if you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating. Press the follow button and share on all of your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's David Prutton and I'll see you same time next week for another episode of This, the official EFL podcast.